Hello and welcome to the Ex-Military Careers Podcast. This series brings together market-leading experts, veterans and ex-military personnel for empowering discussions, covering topics from diversity to innovation, giving you up-to-date industry insights. EMC is a social enterprise with a mission to support veterans across the UK and the US throughout the entirety of their transition and civilian careers. At Ex-Military Careers, inclusion is the norm, not the exception. I'm your host, Ellis Greenway, ex-Royal Marine and Client Engagement Lead here at Ex-Military Careers, part of the Trinovo Group, and this is episode 9. Today, we are joined by Chris Kirk and Chris Shaw, co-founders of the Gendit Network. Happy listening. Here we are with Chris and Chris. Gents, thanks for jumping on the Ex-Military Careers podcast with us. First of all, if you wouldn't mind both giving us a bit of an intro to yourself, and not bullying here in any way, but Chris, Ginge, if you want to start us off, mate, that'd be great.
I give consent to me being called the Scottish Ginger Kid. Hi, everybody. My name's Chris Shaw. I have recently left 14 years in the Royal Marines earlier this year. Just now, I am a project manager with the engineering consultancy company Jacobs, as a project manager, and have been finding my feet there for the last couple of months. It's been a big eye-opener. Let's just say that my experience of project management within the military is slightly different to a civilian commercial terms. In between that time, Chris and I, who will introduce himself next, have set up the Gendit Network, which is a military support network on LinkedIn. We have obviously spoke to Ellis, who's kindly asked us to come onto the podcast today, and that brings us here today.
Awesome. Yeah. Hi, everyone. Absolute pleasure to be on the podcast. And likewise, as Chris said, Ellis, thanks so much for asking us on. It's always really humbling to get asked to come and speak on these sort of things. So a bit of a background on myself, really similar to Chris Shaw. I left the Marines this year as well. I didn't do as long as him. He's a bit of a sweat. I only done 8 years. So I left this year and joined JP Morgan on their military transition program in January. So subsequently went through that program for about 6 months and then converted into my permanent role in July time, a couple of months ago, as a risk and control manager. And as Chris has already alluded to, we were both at the last commando unit, 4-5 commando together, but we kind of crossed paths, but never really knew each other well. It wasn't until we sort of left the military that we got in touch. And Chris said to me after we'd had a conversation one day, listen, I'm thinking of setting up this group on LinkedIn. What do you think? And I said, you know, that sounds brilliant. And henceforth, the Gendit was formed.
Brilliant. Yeah, and for anyone else listening, might possibly be struggling with the accent, especially with some of our American counterparts over there. I'm sure we'll manage just fine. And that comes down to one huge point that I think would be really good to get stuck into straight from the start. And that's networking. Effectively, this has all come about, you know, your partnership and what you're doing, how we're even sat here today has all come through networking. And if there's one thing that I could advise service leavers to do, you know, from the day they've even started thinking about leaving, it's get networking. The power in it and where it can take you is just phenomenal, especially, you know, we're looking at the global village that we live in now and even the power just on LinkedIn. Coming back to yourselves, where is networking fitted in with all this within your own kind of personal transitions and what you're doing now and anything else to kind of top it up as a bit of a point for people to really take on board?
So there's networking, right? And then there's sort of relationship building. And although they're sort of synonymous, there is sort of differences in that. I would say networking's good. Well, it's the sort of base level relationship building. You meet people. It's quite sometimes it can be transitory. It can just be a sort of, what is it you do? Bit of a general conversation. And that's super important from a generalist point of view. So it's really good to understand what people do when they leave the military, because there's just so much breadth of experience and there's so much opportunity and sectors and roles. So from that sort of generalist networking perspective, it's good to speak to a lot of different people. When you get into the more relationship building side of things, that's sort of goes hand in hand with when you decide where it is you see yourself going, or when you're targeting sectors more and you're targeting roles more. And that's when you start to find, you build relationship with people who you trust and who have sort of trodden paths that you want to tread. and you can really have multiple conversations, spend time with them, really get into the weeds of what it is they do and really understand how their experience is translated into that role. Gain a lot of sort of, you can really get specific with it and gain a lot of sort of market knowledge and whatnot from that individual and sort of what areas they've been working in. So that's what I would say on networking. Like, there's sort of the two different levels of it. And I don't know if there's anything you want to touch on that, Chris.
You know me, I could probably talk all day on all subjects. Networking for me is absolutely fundamental and pivotal in anything, not just leaving the military, but we'll kind of focus on that just now. Without sounding too big headish, somebody said to me, my superpower is networking. Didn't quite agree. I'll go into that later on. Somebody said, Chris, you're the king of networking. Didn't really agree with that either. But here's why I've become, I think, quite successful at it, was because I identified how important it is. Mm-hmm. If you take yourself in a military capacity and also potentially an office capacity, let's take the office one. If you don't know how to work the photocopier or the printer and it breaks, if you know somebody in the technical team who can easily fix it, they can help you out with that. If you've networked into that other team, they can help you out instantly. If you're on a military camp and you need something sorted with your radio, but you don't know how to, you go down to the SIGS hangar and they can help you out if you've networked and you know them down there. And it's the same with military transition. If you do it effectively, you will find someone that can help you in somewhere that you're looking to get help from, whether it be CV writing, getting into an organization. And I could see how the tides are changed. The military sometimes is a little bit old-fashioned. And coming out of the military, you need to kind of get with what is current and how to do things effectively. If you leave the military, or if you're leaving the military and you network successfully, your transition out of the military is going to be so much easier. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be made easier by making those connections that can help you transition, because some have already done it and some are willing to help and some could open doors to a potential future.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. And I think the best words you used there were fundamental and pivotal. Moving forward is, you know, it comes back to the age old saying of, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And you can look at that in two different ways. Someone might look at that negatively, or you can look at it positively and you can make it work to your advantage. But I don't think you can deny that it's a fact. Something else you kind of touched on there, Chris, was the kind of positive aspect to this. But that transition, you know, it's great to hear the success stories. They're motivating, they're inspiring. You know, they get you thinking about other opportunities, things that you might not have considered before. But, you know, being authentic and being real with this, the transition from the military to a civilian world is not easy. It's never perfect. So what about you in your own personal transitions? You know, where are those struggles for you?
Struggles for myself. I have big aspirations and I'm quite a passionate person and I'm like, I'm going to make this work. So I believe in it and I go wholeheartedly into it. But sometimes your plan does not work. And I think the unknown, you could turn around and leave and you're going to go, I'm going to make a success of this. And it might not happen. You should have a plan B, plan C through the Delta almost. My struggles, I didn't have a smooth ride. I left. I started a role. I got promised the world. It was not the world that I thought it was going to be. I lasted 6 weeks because of the culture. Did not want to be there. So I made the drastic decision to leave there without another role. But I believed in myself and I believed in my network as well. Through that network, I managed to secure my next role quite positively. So I think not all journeys are smooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think for me, I would just say two key points. One for when you're actually in the resettlement phase, and the second one for when you're in your first sort of role. So when you're in the resettlement phase, it's super, super easy to burn out, particularly if you've not, and this isn't a criticism because this is something that I've done, I didn't really look to my future until I was in that 12 months. And that's something that Chris talks a lot about and we talk a lot about now in the Gen Dit and Trish and all the other, you know, sort of people who are big in the sort of military transition space. They talk a lot about start planning to leave as soon as you join, sort of thing. And I think there's a different message in that, without going off on a tangent. That's probably something that needs to be pushed into the sort of military community while serving it. And for it to not be seen as a negative thing from the military. But from that perspective, taking that 12 months, you do need to work hard, particularly off again, Chris's point about if you've got lofty aspirations and you want to achieve, absolutely, like as we all do in the military, generally speaking, everyone's super ambitious. You've got to work hard. It's not going to land on your lap. And that's, again, to the networking point that we've been discussing. But for me, it's super easy to burn out. I found myself working, you've got your day job, and then I was working into the evenings and then even working over into the weekends. And so my piece of advice, and one of the sort of struggles I had, and this is one of my learning points from it, is treat it like a second job. So it's like, yeah, work in the evenings by all means, but you need to have, as my missus would call it, you need to do that soul stuff. You need to do the stuff on the weekend that completely disconnects you from anything that's resettlement related.
Yeah.
However, that now obviously everyone's different and has a different sort of capacity and work-life balance. But for me, that was how I done it. I said, you know, Monday to Friday, resettlement, and on the weekends, take that time off, because I came dangerously close to burnout, and I was certainly flirting with burnout on a few occasions. The second point is, when you get into that new role, one of the struggles for me, and this is something that I do miss about the military, it's probably the only thing I miss about the military, apart from the kind of camaraderie side of things, is the measurement of value. So like when you're in the Marines, it's super easy. Like we all know, everyone on this, we know this, right? Like you make the time when you do the run, or you finish the yomp, or you attack the target, or you fix a piece of kit, whatever it is, there's a real clear measure of value add. And I think when you get into a civilian workplace, it takes time to build up that concept of how, you know, you might be adding value, but it's really difficult to measure it. Yeah. And so that's one of the sort of struggles I've found is redeveloping a framework to then use that to measure when I'm adding value.
Yeah, definitely. And a few points really to debunk them. One of the first ones you mentioned was, you know, starting that leaving process as soon as you join. But you know, when you're young and naive, you go into the military thinking this is going to be hoofing, like I finally made it, I got my green beret. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to think, you know, I'm in this now, like I've worked this hard to get here. You know, to start thinking about leaving, probably it's something that didn't cross my mind until, you know, a few more years tick by and you realize, oh God, I'm actually probably gonna have some life responsibilities here that exist outside the military. And when you start looking outside the military and the Marines, especially with such a tight-knit bond and a family and a huge sense of identity, you're redesigning your whole life, right? And that's a very, very overwhelming thought to try and process and break down. And little tips like diarizing that through the week and having your weekends off, really good tips, but almost it's like a double-edged sword, right? With all the values that we learn about, you know, determination. And if you've got that, you're probably naturally going to be the kind of person to go the extra mile. But you know, when does the extra mile become, you know, a few hundred meters too far? And that word burnout is probably one that's, I think, would you could argue it's still got a bit of a negative stigma around it, in that, what do you mean you're burning out? Like, you're supposed to be a bootneck, you're supposed to be a Marine, like you're supposed to be nails, you don't burn out. And yeah, it's a real tough one.
There's a lot. That's a brilliant point. And I think actually that let's focus there very briefly if we can. There's a brilliant point to be teased out there, Ellis. Like, we do have this attitude of, like, where do you define as too much? Because we are driven, we are determined, you are going to go the extra mile, A, because that's who we are, and B, because you almost want to show that to your future employer. I think maybe a couple of the key points to be specific, to give people something tangible. For me, it was behavioural changes. It was things like real lack of energy, becoming irritable, things like that, just getting really close to burnout, where changes almost in character. And that's when having a good oppo, having like your partner or your family, however that may look, that's one for them. Make them aware of that. Have them police you almost and say, hey, listen, you know, you maybe need to take a little bit of time off. And that was what really worked for me. And I think another good measure is, or another good way to view it is, well, that's all good and well, Chris, but I want to keep pushing hard because I want to make sure I get the job that I'm owed. It's like, absolutely. But here's the concern. If you go to the point that you burn out, when you get those interviews, when you have those networking calls with people, they do not get the best version of you. Mm-hmm. They get a version of you that's just spent, that you can't engage in what they're saying, you can't actively listen, you can't give that charisma and your passion across. And Chris, I don't think there's anyone else I know who can just keep going past and can keep giving more.
I've got a high threshold, mate. But my wife made a good point a while ago, and it's kind of sat with me. So I do have kind of backstops that I use as kind of right. I'm stopping now. And she said there was one week I made a couple of mistakes, and I was like, I'm never like this. And she said, Chris, it's better to work at 100% 70% of the time rather than 100%. At 70% of the time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what, that's right, because I've made a couple of mistakes. One of them was a big one that I really beat myself up about, and I thought, this is not me. So that was my time when I thought, right, and my wife also says, when I am stressed, I've got a bad habit of taking more stress on, which I think now quite a few people are starting to see. But I think it's just I've got a high threshold and I want to achieve a lot of great things. And a big driver for me is to help as many people as I can. And I feel this. I've done some soul searching over the last couple of months, and it's this sense of duty. I've left the Marines. I've done 14 years of service and looking out for others. And I think this is my way of reaching back and helping others. And it's kind of, I feel it's a bit of a duty. So even when I'm at that kind of redlining point, I'm like, no, I've got to keep going. I've got to keep going. But I think a huge one for me is self-analysis, taking that reflection time to go, right, what is important to me? I am going to be leaving the military. There is a drop-off cliff edge. Mm-hmm. How can I maximize the time, but also keep it safe as well? So I need to get my HND done. I need to do my own role. All right, somebody's asking me to do a second role at work. I've got a family to look after. You then start having to prioritize whilst leaving as well. So prioritizing is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris, there was another point I wanted to come back to there, where we discussed the tangible successes and how do you start valuing them? And it comes in with a recent post of yours, actually, and one I was discussing last night as well as a few weeks ago. And it links in very well with imposter syndrome, right? And you know, we've come from this environment where you know what your role is, you know what the guy next to you know what his role is. It's very clearly defined and there is no questions, right? And then we are all of a sudden in a completely new world and there's a bit less of that. And you know, you're not going to get, it's easy in the military as well. You know where the next career path is, you know the structure around it, and very different again. So this idea of, you know, Should I be where I am? And I have meetings a lot of the time with people who are, you know, like CEOs and real, you know, senior people who are, you know, a couple of decades out, and they're sat in these rooms thinking, why am I here? Like, I'm just a guy from the military, and not even considering that they've left 20 years ago and they've got all this this knowledge. So, you know, how would you advise people to start dealing with that and that feeling of maybe loss of identity that comes into play with it?
It's a fascinating question. There's probably quite a lot to tease out in that. So to your first point and the how do you gauge value, I think one of the best things you can do, and any manager, good manager worth their salt will embrace this, is to have a little bit of a feedback session. So I'm fortunate enough to have a fantastic manager, but he's more than that. He's a brilliant leader as well. So we sit down and we catch up very regularly and we do have feedback sessions, and it's very much a case of being open and being honest with them and saying, look, this is kind of how I like my feedback. That's a topic in its own right. You know, how do you like feedback being delivered? But a feedback definitely helps. And then there's the second piece on that, to not labour it too much. You need to not treat yourself like you can't be a tyrant to yourself. You have to remind yourself every day. And sometimes I find myself in the drive into work just physically speaking the words, because it activates that different part of your brain. You know, you've only been out the Marines 9 months. You're doing the absolute best you can. You've been given really good feedback and you're adding as much value as much as you can for the time and the experience that you've got. And I think that's something that people need you know, should try and do as much as possible, because how often in the military are we kind to ourselves, or how often do we find ourselves maybe being a little bit harsh with ourselves? And, you know, so that's probably where the transition comes in from a mind state perspective. But what I'll do is I'll let Chris speak. I'll let Chris talk about the identity stuff as well, because I think he's probably got quite a good piece to say on that, as he has done a bit longer. So there's probably more of an identity change there for him.
I've got 2 points to pull out of this, but my question both to you to try and start this off, to Chris and Ellis, did you ever go into a position in the Marines and feel imposter syndrome?
No.
At any point?
Ellis? Very rarely. Very rarely. Well, no, actually, that's not true. I did. When I finished my juniors, I did, actually. Actually, now you say that, yeah, I did. I did. Not so much as a Marine, because a lot of it was lateral transfers, so it's kind of jobs that you're taking a lot of skills across into. But when I took my first leadership position as a corporal, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah, the exact same situation jumped out to me there. The early leadership stages, when I was the most junior, one of the youngest people in my troop, when I went up to start those leadership as even as a Landshark. And then the juniors, when you go hopping into, I did my skill at arms straight after, being one of the most junior and youngest kind of people on the course as well and in the corps, it was like, you start getting looked at, you know, recruits are going to look at you like, God, like when you're in training, you're looking at them like, these guys are gods, like they know everything. It's just what it's like, isn't it? And then all of a sudden you realize that they actually probably didn't know anything. Like I didn't know anything. You're doing these lessons on, you know, a weapon system that I probably not ever used before. Like I remember we were using mortars, one that I hadn't used, but I'm delivering a lesson on it. And then it comes back into this idea of, you know, someone's taught me and they've probably been in exactly the situation, and it's just how you deliver it. But yeah, long story short, I think that was my first real exposure.
And then, since leaving the military, just a kind of brief answer to the both of you. Since leaving the military, have you had imposter syndrome, and do you think it's been heightened more than in the military?
Yes, absolutely. Because this backs up my original point. When you said initially, have you had imposter syndrome in the military? My initial answer was no. From the perspective of a Marine, where you're comfortable and you've got to know your job and you've got your sort of role. But then actually the same as Ellis, when I think about it, I had it when I was in that leadership position. And so what's the commonality? Well, the commonality is that you're out with your comfort zone. It's something that's completely new. You get, you know, almost a year in commando training to learn how to be a Marine. So it's kind of quite incremental. Whereas when you're a corporal, you're just a corporal. It's like you're now a leader. And it's the same thing when you leave. For me, moving into financial services, there's two sort of positions there. There's one where you're in a completely new role, but you don't even have the safety of it being an environment that you're comfortable with. It's a completely different environment in every respect. The type of people you work with is different. The knowledge is different. The processes are different. So I think it is kind of imposter syndrome on steroids, because it's just that little bit more, because you're in an already challenging environment.
So where I was going to go with this point is, I believe that imposter syndrome gets stronger when you're leaving the military, because you people who will go into positions, this is a sweeping generalist statement, that people will go into positions in the military and they'll just cuff it. They won't worry about it, because they know that there's no, if they don't know how to do that job, they're going to go, oh, no one's told me how to, I don't know how to do that. And there won't be any consequences to it. Whereas I believe when you're going into civvy street, it heightens, because you're like, well, if I don't do that right, I'm going to get fired, and then I won't have a salary, and then my wife will leave me. And you know, there's so many more consequences. So I think that imposter syndrome heightens when you leave, because you put pressure on, you need to know this job to keep the salary coming in. I think what some military people are good at, and I think this is my superpower, not networking. My superpower is I have this unparalleled self-confidence, and I don't know where it came from being a wee skinny ginger kid, but I've got this confidence that just takes me into a room and it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'll say that. but in 2 days' time, I will know exactly what I'm doing because I've got belief in myself because I've been out in the Middle East fighting. I've been in Norway and deep Arctic. I've been in these unbelievable situations and I've come out the other side and I'm taking that into Civvy Street and I'm going, I'm going to make a success of this.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a real coat of armour. And, you know, I agree that I would say that's something that you just... It slowly, I think it feels like it's something that happens very out of the blue, where one day you just wake up and you're like, you just feel a little bit invincible. Like, you know, put me anywhere and like, you know, throw me to the walls, I'll come back leading, and that kind of idea. And, you know, that in itself can be a double-edged sword of confidence. But I think it will at least take you so far where you've got a good fighting chance to go and give anything a go. So do you think that that was something that was slowly ingrained in you? Or did, you know, did you, like, I remember waking up and it was actually strange, and it came back from after a trip to Australia, which was a core rugby tour over there. And I felt like for whatever reason, the people that I was around, I came back from that really strangely different. And I don't know what it was, but a different level of confidence. Did you have anything where it was like one thing, or do you think it was just slowly ingrained, or, you know, what was that like for you?
For me, I think I've been unnaturally confident since a young age for some reason. Really? I don't know if genetics and in my blood, I don't know. I think the Marines refined it into being confident but not cocky.
Yeah.
I think that's one way that I would describe it. I'm very polite, but I'm quite forward. I'll ask for things. Don't ask, don't get. Live by it. And I think that does take a certain... era of confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, what about you, Chris?
I mean, it's a fascinating question. It's as Chris kind of touched on briefly, it's the old nature versus nurture thing. Is it that Chris was always a confident guy and that the Marines refined it, or was it that he was a blank slate and that the Marines sort of created it in him? I think you've already answered your question, what you think it is, and I would actually agree. I think that something like commando training just shows you who you are, if that makes sense, and refines what good qualities are there and tries to maybe at the very least alert you to qualities that aren't so good, and then in the best case maybe set you on a path to getting rid of qualities that you wouldn't necessarily think are valuable. For me, I think one of the things, it's really, really, really close to what Chris is talking about, but it's subtly different. I wouldn't say that I'm super confident, but it has never, failure from a perspective of giving up has never, ever, ever crossed my mind. Even in commando training, I was always like, worst case scenario, I get back tripped and I go into Hunter, but I will come out the other end of this. I will succeed. And that translates beautifully into civilian world, where it's like, take for example, I'm in this role and it's maybe not me. And that's for a lot of people, that is the situation they find themselves in. They come into a new role. Chris had that himself. But it's like, I will be successful regardless. It's not to say that you won't fail, because failure is part of life. And it's actually some of the best lessons I've ever learned from failure. The point is that you won't give up. You won't just say, oh, well, that's it. Maybe I should pack it all in and do whatever. You'll keep pushing forward and you'll find a way through it. Like, what, you know, the old Stoic saying, what the obstacle that's in the way becomes the way.
Yeah.
And I think that is absolutely ingrained in us as bootnecks, but obviously ex-military is a wider sort of generalization as well. So that's been my experience.
And I think it comes, you know, a really interesting point for me, and I think it's something that I've discussed with a few people now, is this idea that, you know, when you've been exposed to bad situations, right, and you've had exposure to what really can go wrong in life, I find and believe that that creates a different mindset, where you can really understand what's important and what isn't. And then all of a sudden, when you realize that, you know, 99% of the things a lot of people are worrying about, you shouldn't worry about. And I think that gives you a confidence and a confidence to prioritize and then really attack what you think is important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about perspective, and I think you can take that in a really, really positive way. And I think that's, as people, again, are the type of people that we are, that's what we do. So you take it from a perspective of, am I in Norway? Is it minus 32? Am I in a brush shelter, you know, trying to crawl into my bag? No, it's not as bad as all that. So that's a nice perspective. It's a nice perspective to have. And you have to have gone through that adversity in order to be able to have that perspective. And yeah. So I think that does translate over really nicely. And certainly where I've seen that, so again, taking that, well, where's the metric in it? Well, the metric is the value add. The metric is you don't panic in situations, or we very rarely panic in situations. Some situations that have arisen where I've been like, why are we losing our heads here? It's only when we actually give the problem, when we turn around and face the problem, it's not actually the giant monster we think it is. It's actually just this small little problem that we can fix. And having that perspective of comparing it, it can definitely add some value. It can definitely give you a good way of viewing problems that maybe sometimes get blown out of proportion.
Chris, do you want to weigh in with anything to top up there?
I believe it's more an individual thing, because everyone, like, people can go through the Marine training, people can be in the military, and not every single one is going to think the same. Not every single one is going to prioritize the same. So I think there is a kind of base level of, right, I need to do this. So if you're going into the field, you know that you've got to get your weapon ready. You know that you've got to eat to keep yourself sustainable. These are all kind of priorities. When you leave and you transition to civilian context, it's not the same kind of priorities. You will have that kind of intrinsic nature of, right, what's my nearest crocodile to the boat? I need to fend that off. That's where I find myself just now. I've gone into a new project and my first instinct was to go, what do I need to do first? And I don't know if that's a military thing, because I am fairly certain there's hundreds of thousands of civilians that could go into the same position as me and they will think the same. It's just, I've had this come up on LinkedIn a few times through comments and posts. There's a lot of people supporting veterans and service leavers of saying, this is what qualities and values a service leaver or a veteran will bring to you. Mm-hmm. And there's been some arguments from other people who will say, but a civilian will do that too. And I fully agree and I fully endorse with that. But what I would argue is, to what degree and how is that forged? Let's go back to Norway, as we keep referencing it. It's a very hospitable environment. If you don't do the priorities in the right action order, there's going to be serious consequences. Your life is in the balance of some of these things. So I think that's where military values and the way that we think comes into these kind of the way that we're thinking. It's just the degree of how we think. That's what I think. Every individual is different. But the military does give you a certain prioritizing factor.
Yeah. So a couple more things I'd like to go into and pose to you just as we start to look to round up here. But one, you know, talking about the involvement with military in the workplace, you know, what are your personal experiences dealing with, you know, within your own places of work? You know, do you specifically really enjoy coming across a veteran and working with them? Do you find much difference as opposed to working with, you know, people who've been civilians their whole life?
I think for the both of us, it would be quite obvious. The answer would be quite obvious, because we've set up the fastest and biggest growing military support network that there is on LinkedIn platform. So I think we've both found ourselves in companies that are very kind of military supportive. As I spoke about in the first part of the podcast, I left to do a job and I left it pretty quickly. They were not military orientated. They had one very, very old veteran who didn't really see himself as that. They had no ties to military. It was very close to home and I thought, this is going to be perfect. And I soon got in. I thought, this culture is not for me. They don't want to be part of the Armed Forces Covenant. I've put it on their desk weeks ago. They didn't really want to hear anything about it. My new employment area has a designated veterans force, veterans network. There's huge, there's hundreds of people. I work within defence, so there's I meet lots and lots of veterans within my kind of internal community.
Again, very, very similar, as Chris touched on. JP Morgan and Jacobs, I think, are both super supportive for veterans. Within JP Morgan, we've got the VetsNet, which is exactly the same sort of thing as what Chris was alluding to in Jacobs. It's a massive veterans network. It spans into the US as well. And we have events. So like some of the example of the events we've done recently, we've had a Jubilee lunch where we had some people attend externally who were looking to join the bank veterans. We've got like a lunch, donuts and coffee lunch next week. We've obviously got the military transition program, which is sort of looped into the vet net as well, where we run events and into the events in the vets net sort of helps out the ladies who run the program. So it's all super, it's all super inclusive. It's all just, even from a job perspective, there's lots of networking internally with vets and talking about roles and jobs and moves. So from that perspective, it's absolutely brilliant. And to answer your question, it's an individual thing, like Chris has already touched on. Like, I don't find any difference working with a veteran as I do someone who's been a civilian all their life. In fact, there is no difference, really, when you're actually in that work environment. The banter's maybe slightly different, but some of the people in my team are just phenomenal, who have been civilians their whole life. They're just super, super intelligent people. They've got amazing skill set. I think, if anything, it's nice to have that. It's nice to have a little sort of touch network for veterans, just so that everyone kind of knows where everyone's coming from. But yeah, from that perspective, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and a few points that we'll probably need a lot more time to discuss in terms of the recruitment and retention of veterans. I think the recruitment of vets is one thing, but the retention of vets, and particularly kind of pointing with you, Christian, is the retention of veterans. You know, I think we're naturally quite trusting because of the environment we come into, but you know, when you're internally part of something, you know, we've been so used to such an amazing environment and, you know, such kind of collaboration and trust and the high performing teams that you need something special to hold on to kind of that top end talent as well. Something that we can debunk in the future, I'm sure. But two kind of last things that I'd like to touch off with. The very last thing is a bit more on gender and to talk about the network and things that are coming up. But before that, I think something that would be really beneficial for our following in the community is if you could almost elevate a pitch me now, but just to discuss, you know, 30 seconds to a minute on the top advice you could give to anyone going through their transition now. So that'd be great to get from both of you.
Put us on the spot a little bit there, Ellis, have you? Okay, what would my advice be? So it's got to be networking. It's got to be speaking, build relationships, get networking. Second thing, get on LinkedIn. There's so much out there, and it gives you such a deep knowledge. You can see what people do. You can have interactions, and that ties really nicely to the networking. And then here's the last point I'll leave you with. Back yourself. I steal this from Ben James. He done a LinkedIn Live with Matt Pybus the other day. And this is something that I've learned the hard way, and Chris has learned the hard way, I think, as well. Back yourself. When we come from the military, we're super, like, values orientated, and it's, like, super, super, super loyal. And that's great, but always back yourself as well.
Cool. Good advice. Thanks.
I've got three top tips. So from me is, people invest in people. And that kind of ties in with networking. If you're just boshing out 500 CVs, Canvas, through kind of like portals, it's going to take a long time. Back to networking. If you start having genuine conversations with people, I mean, look at this podcast. If you had just sent me a cold call email saying, Chris, I just want to do this podcast, I'd probably be like, yeah, cheers, that's. But you reached out, we've had conversations, and you've said, listen, guys, we've got this idea. Do you want to do it? You've put time into me. So I'm like, yeah, I'll put time into you. People invest in people. So going through your resettlement and your transition, start reaching out to people, do some favors for some people, and they will probably in turn do some for you. Don't ask, don't get, if you've got the confidence to do so. But I say this within reason. If you're a young Marine with no experience, don't be expecting, because two of your mates have got an 80k job, to walk in to an 80k job. I have almost helped build this network off of asking help from other people. The events that we have run have all been from the kindness of other people. It's just I'm a gobshite and I go out and ask them to help. So don't ask, don't get. there's a director over at the company that you really like, reach out to him. Hi, or her. Hi, can I have half an hour of your time to speak about the company? I'm really interested. If they turn around and say, yeah, that's going to benefit you. Final one is buddy-buddy system. You've left a whole career of looking out for your oppos, whether it's been on a parade and pulling Irish pennants off of each other, whether it's been in the field and making each other a hot wet, up in the grots looking after each other, getting your mate out of bed when you're late for a parade or something like that. When you're going through resettlement, I had a bit of a kind of thing where I would go to my mate's doors and I would tell them what I'd learnt that day, one, to reiterate it into me, and two, for a bit of teaching down the corridor, until they started slamming the doors in my face and went back to playing FIFA. But I had buddies that I would check in on and they would check in on me. Some of them would come to my door at 10 o'clock at night, and it's kind of going back to this burnout and backstop and going, Chris, Jink, you should turn the laptop off now. And I was like, right, okay. But even after transitioning, Chris and I hadn't spoke ever. And then we reached out, and then from then on, we pretty much spoke every single day, checking in on each other. Again, there was, I think, one time in April, Chris was like, mate, I think you need to take a couple of days off the group. And I was like, thanks, I think you're right. And that buddy-buddy doesn't stop. So my suggestion is for people leaving is to get a buddy that's potentially going through the same process as you, or having a little bit of a mentor or a coach, and they can turn around and go, Ellis, I think you're at bingo. Or how's things going? How's that CV going? Yeah. So that's my three tips.
Spot on. Perfect. Thanks so much for that, gents. Definitely insightful. I think we'll help the community. And but just to finish off, obviously so much going on with Gen Dit, lots in the pipeline. Do you want to just round us off with a bit of an insight and what's coming up next and in the near future?
Sure. So this started on the 19th of March. We thought 100, 200 people may join. We're now at 5,300 odd amazing people in this community. We thought a few people might get helped with CVs, etc. I think I know of 20 plus people that have landed roles from the group. This is all done in Chris and I's spare time. We don't have an end goal. I don't think there should be an end goal with this. I don't want to say this is what we're going to achieve, because we are ticking off goals every single month. So we're just iteratively making sure that it changes, reaching new goals, setting out new ideas. My brain doesn't really stop, so I'm pretty sure that there's more ideas that's going to come out. We've done the Glasgow event a couple of months ago, which was a storming success. And because we are both Scottish and it was in Glasgow, everyone down south started complaining and said, we must have one. So on the 3rd of December this year, we're going to be in London doing the London Gen Dit event. It's for community members only, because of the community vibe that we kind of have. It's very personable. It's not just an open event. If service people in the UK and veterans in the UK want to join it, please feel free to look it up. The reason I say UK is I know that you've got a big following in America. Unfortunately, my administration levels cannot cope with transatlantic members joining the group. The other reason is some of our policies, the help, etc., is quite niche to the UK. Into next year, I honestly don't know what's going to happen. It's probably going to grow. It's probably going to get to 10,000 members. We're probably going to have Gen Dit ambassadors. The way that we're looking at it is splitting it up into regions. Let's say Southwest, Southeast, Central, North. And hopefully we can have a couple of ambassadors who will be those Gen points of contact to say, because Chris and I can only do so much.
Yeah.
And what we are really good at is signposting. Yeah. So let's just say, Ellis, you're down in London. I get a post and it's like, I'm looking for project management in London. And I'm like, over to you, Ellis.
Yeah.
And that's how I can see the near future going for us.
Got you. Amazing. Well, I think it touches on the networking point so much there. I mean, the stats are there. 20 people networking in one group and finding roles. Like, how amazing is that? And what a great thing to achieve. So yeah, and if anyone who's listening to this in the UK and wants a bit more assistance, and you know, there's so many people in that group offering so much every day. I think you were telling me recently how many posts are coming up in every day. So yeah, if you're someone who can get something from it or something to offer, have a look. But Jen's about kind of rounds us up for the day. So thanks for your final thoughts there. So much insight. But yeah, I'm sure we'll catch up soon, and so many exciting things in the pipeline that we'll get moving on to. But cheers, gents.
Thanks, Alice.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks again to Chris and Chris for joining us for yet another insightful podcast episode, exploring their experiences as transitioning ex-forces personnel, their transitions into different sectors, as well as highlighting Gender as a platform supporting veterans. EMC is a social enterprise with a mission to support veterans across the UK and the US throughout the entirety of their transition and civilian careers. At ex-military careers, inclusion is the norm, not the exception. If you would like to discuss strategies and how you can build diverse teams, or are interested in having a conversation regarding the current job market, please do reach out to us or visit our website at www.exmilitarycareers.com. If you stand behind inclusion and representing the society we live in, partner with us today. For now, stay connected, and we'll speak to you soon.